Hey, everybody. April Bear here. Before we get into today's episode, I want to ask for your help with something. We're looking for your stories about how the pandemic has changed the relationships in your life. Maybe you're getting sick of your pod, or maybe you're finding joy in spending more time with your family. Trying to navigate socially distanced dating? We want to hear all about it, whatever your experience is. You can leave us a voicemail. I'm going to give you the number. It's 734-764-7840. Or you can email us. The address is stateside@michiganradio.org. If you're tech savvy, try recording your story on voice memo or another phone app and email it into us. Then tune in next week for a deep dive on pandemic relationships and a little advice on how to keep each other close during tough times. All right, back to the pod.
It feels really hurtful to know that people like me, people that I love who are disabled, are not considered worth saving in this moment.
The state of Michigan is beginning to open up the pool of people eligible for the COVID-19 vaccine. But many in the disability community say they're being left behind, despite a higher risk of serious complications from the virus. This is Stateside. I'm April Bear. What to say about the pandemic? The fear, the inconvenience, the isolation, the disruption of our routines. Say all the things that everyone is grappling with, now say them twice for those among us who are living with disabilities. Detroit recently announced that it has placed people with disabilities in a priority group. That means they can schedule their vaccine appointments. Dessa Cosma is the executive director of Detroit Disability Power. She's going to talk to us about how the advocacy community got Detroit to take them seriously and why the risks for folks during COVID aren't always apparent. Hey, Dessa, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, thank you so much. Glad to be here.
There's such a range of ways that COVID might be affecting people's lives in this moment. Could you talk a little bit about what you've seen happening with your community during the pandemic?
Absolutely. So since the beginning of the pandemic, since the moment that things shut down in Michigan and people across the country were realizing that this was happening in the United States, the disability community was on high alert. Intuitively, we knew that we would be harder hit than others. We knew that we were likely to be left out of the emergency response because we fall through the cracks on a good day. You know, when there's not a global pandemic and an economic recession, people with disabilities are not doing well as a group because of structural inequities, because of ableism, which is the systemic oppression of people with disabilities. We tend to be neglected. We tend to not be at the table when decisions are being made that impact us. And we knew that in the moments when really important decisions were being made quickly in response to the pandemic, that we'd probably be forgotten. And unfortunately, to a large degree, that's exactly what happened. There was another thing that was really concerning at the beginning of the pandemic, which was the dominant narrative in the media and from our elected officials was aimed to calm everyone down. The narrative was, okay, guys, you know, calm down. It's just the sick people. It's just the old people that are going to die. Like, everyone calm down. And, you know, for those of us who are the sick and old people, makes us feel like we're expendable. And that didn't need to be the case. And all of us started raising the alarm immediately, trying to get our elected officials to do things so that we could access the information about staying safe, make sure that data was collected on people with disabilities who got COVID so that we could design correct interventions, making sure that hospitals weren't discriminating against us when they didn't have enough hospital beds or ventilators. And here we are now, 11 months later, trying to make sure we have access to the vaccine. And again, we're somehow at the back of the line.
Could you, I know that you were part of the campaign to get the city of Detroit to expand its vaccine eligibility. Will you tell us when and how that got started?
Sure. So, you know, since the beginning of the pandemic, Detroit Disability Power and other disability rights and justice organizations in Michigan and across the country have been doing a lot of organizing. And we have gotten some wins and we've also largely been ignored. And so as the new year started and vaccinations started becoming available and we started being able to see the end of the tunnel for this pandemic, we also realized when we looked at the state's vaccine distribution plan that people with disabilities were almost completely absent from that plan. And at the same time, research started coming out from around the country about the disparate impact of COVID on people with disabilities. And the data wasn't disturbing in a small way. The data was highly disturbing. People with intellectual and developmental disabilities are 3 times more likely to die from COVID than other people. People with schizophrenia are 3 times more likely to die from COVID. People with Down syndrome are 10 times more likely to die from COVID. These are really unacceptable disparities. These are not inevitabilities. It didn't have to be this way. And there's still time to rectify that to some degree through prioritizing vaccines for these groups, but there has to be the political will to do it. So we started organizing. I mean, that's what we do. We're a social justice organization. We started organizing our community and our allies to put pressure on the mayor and on the governor and MDHHS to say, hey, enough is enough. We've been ignored. The data shows what the impact of that neglect is, and you have to do something about this. And so we sent 400 letters in 10 days to the mayor's office, countless phone calls to the mayor's office, and he looked at the data and he saw the reality, which is that there's a disparity that's unacceptable, and he made the right choice by prioritizing vaccines for people 18 and older with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
It's not hard to understand why COVID poses such a threat to someone with, I don't know, like a serious CP condition or a severe developmental disability. Can you unpack why it's also a struggle for folks with, say, vision impairments or autism or schizophrenia?
So I think people do kind of intuitively understand that some bodies are more susceptible to illness and disease because of weaknesses in the immune system. And so, as you said, that's one factor. But just the way that disparities exist for other marginalized groups, right, due to higher rates of poverty, due to lack of information in appropriate modes, due to neglect in decision-making rooms, all of those also apply to communities of people with disabilities. Right. So we had to fight initially to make sure that briefings about COVID were done in American Sign Language. We're still having to fight to make sure that websites that allow people to sign up for vaccines are usable by a screen reader so blind and visually impaired people can sign up. These structural issues add up in really significant ways. So someone like me, who's a wheelchair user, my body itself is not more susceptible to COVID, but the circumstances of being disabled in this society make me more susceptible. I have to touch more things. I can't socially distance from people in the same way. Many people in our community have personal care attendants who help them bathe and use the restroom and eat. All of these factors add up to make people more susceptible. And so it's really important to remember that we know that there's a disparity in communities of color, not because people of color's bodies are weaker to COVID, but because of the social factors. Those social factors also apply to people with disabilities, and they're doubly impactful to people of color with disabilities.
We need to take a break. When we come back, Dessa is going to talk to us about how vaccination's going in her community. We'll be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Dessa, what kind of conversations have you had with the state about opening up the line, the vaccination line, to people with disabilities all across Michigan?
We have sent almost 900 letters in the last 3 weeks to the governor's office and MDHHS. These are constituents from around mostly southeastern Michigan who are raising their voices to say, hey, pay attention to us. We have had multiple appearances in local media, on TV, radio, and in print. And we're not getting much of a response from the state. We know that there's a lack of data collected. There's a lack of transparency about the data that has been collected. We know the risk is there. The data from other places shows a tremendous disparity. And we're just not getting enough action from the state.
We got a note from a listener a little while ago, and she has a son who's living with autism. She was obviously very frightened for him contracting COVID because of what his hospital experience would be like. But she was also just deeply worried that people who work with him, caregivers, were prioritized while he was not. What we hear from the state that's a matter of practicality. But what does it say about the value that we place on the lives of people with disabilities?
Well, I can't speak for how anybody at the state feels, but what I can say is that as a disabled person, it makes me feel unvalued. It scares me that my life is considered less important than someone else's. I know what discrimination feels like. I deal with it every time I leave my house, which, you know, lately isn't much. But for all of my 38 years, I have known what discrimination feels like. And it can feel frustrating. It can feel infuriating. But it also feels scary. It feels, and it feels really hurtful to know that people like me, people that I love, who are disabled, are not considered worth saving in this moment. That feels deeply immoral. It also feels like bad public policy. All of the evidence points to a hugely disparate impact, and yet we're not seeing action.
Yeah. What have you heard about the hospital experience for people who have contracted the disease?
It varies based on the person and based on the circumstance, right? So, you know, one of the things about disability is that it's very diverse. There's a million different diagnoses. And on top of that, people have other identities that impact the way that people treat them and their access to resources. So there's going to be a lot of different experiences, and they're going to be somewhat idiosyncratic, but they're also across the board. If you talk to people with disabilities, there's a lot of negative, largely negative experiences in hospitals and medical establishments, even pre-COVID. So going in alone to a hospital because you can't have somebody come with you, if you're a person who really relies on the stability of a caregiver or a parent who helps you with daily tasks, is terrifying. Going in knowing that a person who works there may not see your life as valuable as the patient in the room next door means that you may not get care if there's not enough to go around. That's terrifying. You know, it's. I haven't heard any good stories, I'll tell you that. There's a lot of different ways that this is very scary to people in our community.
Can we talk for a minute about how the vaccination rollout is going for the folks that you advocate for? Are people able to get appointments to get their shots?
So I used myself as a test case for this immediately when Mayor Duggan made the announcement. And I was able to call and make an appointment without any problem. The first question that I was asked is, are you 65? Which I am not. And what I quickly followed up my no response with was, but I am a person with a developmental disability. And she said, okay, well, let's get you scheduled. And within a few days, I was at TCF. I drove myself there. I had a very smooth experience. I showed them a note from my doctor stating that I had a developmental disability. And I got my shot, and I was out of there within 45 minutes. That is the way it should go. Yeah. But I've also heard reports of people calling and the person on the phone saying that they weren't eligible because they weren't 65. And so there's definitely some room for some training on the call center end. So we're trying to work with the city to make sure that, those glitches are getting fixed.
What about the accessibility of places where people are going? There is the TCF Center, but I know there are other churches and places that people might be asked to go to get their vaccination.
Sure. So I don't know much about the churches. I do know that having lived in Detroit for 15 years, a lot of the churches here are old and not very accessible. I'm not sure, though, how or where they're doing them on the church grounds. So like at TCF, you don't even get out of your car. So if you can get a ride or if you can drive, it is accessible. Of course, a lot of people in our community can't do that. And so the city is offering wheelchair accessible rides if you ask for one, which is amazing. I do think it's really important that we start having a strategy, not only for going into neighborhoods to vaccinate people so that it's easier for people to find the mobile unit than it is to get down to TCF or something like that, but also to go into people's homes. There are a lot of disabled people who cannot leave their house and have caregivers coming and going, so they are at risk of getting COVID, and they need to be able to get a vaccine too. So we got to put that on the list of things to get done here in Detroit and across the state.
There have been many, many conversations during this past year about how things should be different after the pandemic. Are there fault lines that the epidemic has highlighted in Michigan's relationship with folks with disabilities?
Absolutely. The lack of access to decision-making tables in meaningful ways is huge. The lack of prioritization for our community, that's become even more evident. It seems very obvious to us at Detroit Disability Power and other disability organizations that have been working on these things the last 11 months that there's just not a competency at most government levels and in most departments about disability and what our day-to-day lives are like. And without that competency, decisions are going to be made that not only exclude us, but actually harm us. And so we have a lot of learning to do as a larger Michigan community. The good news is that people with disabilities can really help non-disabled people get it if those people are willing to listen. We have a lot to teach that's not just beneficial for us as disabled people, but actually beneficial for entire communities, because there's a lot of disabled people. You know, in Detroit alone, there's 126,000 disabled people. All of us have families or friends or caregivers who are impacted by our lives and the ways that we can or cannot access our communities. And so solving problems for people with disabilities actually is a really good move for everyone.
Dessa Cosma is the executive director of Detroit Disability Power. Dessa, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Stateside reached out to the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services for response to criticism that the state should be prioritizing more people with disabilities. Their spokesperson sent us a statement that reads, in part, "Michigan is accelerating vaccination of Michiganders age 50 and older with medical conditions or disabilities, and caregiver family members and guardians who care for children with special health care needs due to concern around disparity in life expectancy and in an effort to remove barriers for vaccine access. Recognizing the recent update to the federal plan to increase production of the vaccine, MDHHS is in active discussions finalizing our plan and will announce the next round of eligibility in the near future." You can find the full statement linked in today's show notes. And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. Please subscribe to us wherever you listen and check out more Stateside interviews from today's show, which is streaming at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Today's episode was produced by April Van Buren. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music by Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. Back with you next time.